Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate my guts right now?
At least a 47.
Oh. He's really like, nice.
I don't think that's on the scale.
That's not an option. So, I mean, you gotta take that back. You gotta dial that back a little bit.
Oh, okay, then, definitely a 10.
No, honestly, no, this movie is not that bad. I mean, It's not great, but it's entertaining.
We're back to Godzilla this week with Ebra, Horror of the Deep.
Horror, sorry.
Or alternate titles, the other big title this is known by, the U.S. title, Godzilla versus the Sea Monster. The Japanese title literally translates to Godzilla, Ebra, Mothra, Big Deal in the South Seas.
Yes.
French, Godzilla versus Ebra.
Oh, and the German titles are the German best. Title. This makes zero sense whatsoever.
Frankenstein and the Monster from the Sea.
Frankenstein's movie.
If you look at old monster movies that were released in Germany always retitled the main monster Frankenstein because I guess Frankenstein was really, really popular over there, and they thought they could sell more tickets that way.
That's fair.
So, you go, people.
I want to
apologize if you can hear a TV in the background.
If you hear it, it's Downton Abbey.
It's Downton Abbey. We're having to record in a different room than normal, closer to the living room television.
Because of your mother.
And because my mother rearranged the back room, and I'm very upset. A new friend. But when we move out, when we become real men, we move out.
When Aaron graduates college and decides that he wants to leave his home.
Yes, we can record wherever we want.
Whenever we want.
However we want. But let's get into before we get into family drama, let's get into some making of this
whenever
movie.
Whenever we want. Did somebody say boom? Sorry.
All right, so making of this movie. So this movie has an interesting history. This movie is developed from an unused script that Toho had laying around for a King Kong movie. They unfortunately lost the rights to King Kong before they got around to making this movie. But the script was originally called Operation Robinson Crusoe, King Kong versus Ebra.
That's interesting.
Watching this movie now, I think they literally just took the script
and then put Godzilla,
scratched out King Kong, and wrote in Godzilla.
That's probably accurate.
Because we'll talk about as we go through the movie, like some of the instances where you can like that was definitely a scene written for King Kong that they just put Godzilla in. But Tomoyuki Tanaka, the producer of the Godzilla franchise, we haven't talked about him a lot on this podcast, even though we should, because he is really the godfather of Godzilla. He was not very active in this production. I think it's the first one that he was not taking a very active role in. So this movie has a bit of a different feel to it, I think, because of that. For one thing, Fukuda, the director, I don't know if he wasn't a big fan of Ifukube or just for his vision of this movie, he didn't want Ifukube scoring it. He brought on Masaru Sato, kind of against Tanaka's wishes, but we'll talk about Masaru Sato's score here in a little bit. This particular movie was featured as episode 213 of MST3K. I've not watched it. Might look it up sometime. And although Eiji Tsuburaya is credited as the special effects director, his assistant, I'm going to say Teisho Arikawa, actually did most of the work. Tsuburaya still had final say in all of the sequences, but he wasn't actually on set doing the work. And with Tsuburaya sidelined, Toho decided that they could take this young guy, Arikawa, and really instruct a enforce a strict budget. They tried to limit the cost of the special effects in this movie. That's why they set it on an island so they didn't have to build a bunch of huge city models.
Yeah.
And they tried to limit compositing shots, which there's still a decent number of compositing shots in this movie, but I think it is cut down from what you'd normally see. And obviously they were reusing the Godzilla and the Mothra suit for this movie. And finally, just a little interesting tidbit. When they were filming the underwater scenes, which, you know, not all of that is actually underwater. Some of it is like just got a filter on it, but for what is actually filmed underwater, Hiroo Nakajima wore a wetsuit under the Godzilla suit, and it took them 2 weeks to film what little water scenes they filmed, because I guess it was difficult to film. But
I mean, you put a man in a heavy dinosaur suit underwater
and try to film that. Yeah, I'm sure it was a headache. And then some box office information. This movie was released, again, on December 17th of 1966.
Dude, we're sticking with this theme of Christmas movies. It's like the last quite a few.
Total attendance after reissues and everything of 4,120,000 tickets made around 330 million yen. It is the first Godzilla film to sell less than 5 million tickets in Japan, but it is still the eighth most successful Godzilla film in Japan in terms of attendance.
Nice.
So, still not bad. You can see where it was trailing off. This is around the time in Japan where television got really, really big. And part of the reason Tsuburaya was not as involved in this production is because he had started Tsuburaya Productions and they were doing Ultraman at this point. I guess they were probably... I think Ultraman had just started. They had finished up Ultra Q and started with Ultraman.
Oh, I didn't know Eiji Tsuburaya made the Ultraman series.
Yeah, he made his own company, and they made the Ultraman series.
That explains why he uses a lot of the
old suits
and stuff for his monsters.
I think it probably most correlates... The decline in the popularity of cinema in Japan in this era probably most directly correlates with the rise of popularity of television and tokusatsu television shows. Like, and a lot of parents are probably like, when we get to watch this for free every week with Ultraman, why would we go to the theater to watch basically the same thing? So, you know, I think that was a big concern with Toho and budgets and everything. But anyway, we are going to watch a trailer for this movie. We are going to listen to a trailer for this movie. Then we will return. I will read off the cast and crew. Dylan will read. I am struggling.
So after we come back from listening to this trailer, Aaron is going to go ahead and read off the cast and crew as usual, and then I will read this very well prepared plot summary that is a small essay. So we'll see in a minute.
But it is very detailed and very accurate.
It is. So anyway.
Godzilla, Ebira, and Mothra in one of the most explosive action pictures ever to hit the screen. From the depths of the ocean comes the most terrifying horror of the deep. From within the mountain caves comes the dreaded monster Godzilla. See the most titanic battle ever screened when the monster of the deep challenges the mighty Godzilla.
All right, we're back. So we actually have a couple of new names on the cast and crew list here. First and foremost, this movie was directed by Jun Fukuda. I don't think we've talked about him on this podcast before. He was the assistant director on Rodan way back when we reviewed that movie, like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Only 2 or 3 weeks ago?
No, I guess probably closer to 4 weeks ago.
How long have we been doing this? No.
I don't know. But anyway, so, and he will be returning a few more times for this podcast.
No kidding.
Written again by Shinichi Sekizawa. Music by Masaru Sato, who we have talked about once before with Godzilla Raids Again, but we'll get back around to him when we talk about the score for this movie. Effects by Eiji Tsuburaya and Teisho Arikawa. And then starring Akira Takarada, Toru Watanabe, Toru Ibuki, Chotaro Togen, Hideo Sunazuka, Kumi Mizuno, Pear Bambi as the Sobujin. My favorite name ever.
Pear Bambi.
P-A-I-R-B-A-M-B-I.
Pear Bambi.
Pear Bambi. Jun Tazaki, Akihiko Hirata, and then Haruo Nakajima as Godzilla, and Hiroshi Sakita as Ebera. Yes. Okay, what is the plot?
Anyway, this is a long one, so could be a minute. After his brother, Yata, is lost at sea, Ryota steals a sailboat to find him. Along with him for the ride are his newfound friends, Ichino and Nita, as well as a bank robber, Yoshimura. Soon they encounter Ebra, a giant crustacean living off the shore of Lechi Island. Ebra is not the only danger they face, however, as once on land, they discover it is inhabited by the Red Bamboo, a terrorist organization building nuclear weapons on the island. What's worse, the Red Bamboo are using captured infant island natives as slave labor. Among them is Dayo, who escapes upon her arrival to the island and meets up with our heroes. After an attempted break-in into the Red Bamboo's facility goes wrong, our characters are separated as Ryota hops on a hot air balloon destined for Instant Island. Nita is captured and the other characters retreat into the forest. Desperate, the remaining crew on the island decide to awaken a sleeping Godzilla, who they stumbled upon earlier. Once awoken, Godzilla engages with and beats Ebra before crushing the Red Bamboo's base. Unfortunately, one of the scientists is able to activate a nuclear weapon before dying, and the heroes are unable to stop the countdown. Desperate for rescue, Dayo and the other infant islanders begin furiously praying to Mothra as Godzilla once again engages Ebra. Godzilla defeats the giant shrimp and marches toward the people trapped on the island, but Mothra arrives just in time to rescue them. Seconds before the nuclear bomb goes off, Godzilla jumps into the sea and swims to safety, and Mothra flies her people back home as the screen fades to black.
Woo, yay.
Well, those people were furiously praying. They're angry. They're angrily praying.
Maybe I should have said frantically praying. Guys, stop making fun of my use of
adverbs. Maybe you should learn how to write.
Adverbs.
No, madly.
All right.
Mother, please. Please, Mother, please.
So, you know, this movie is 87 minutes.
It is 86 minutes.
It moves along at a really quick pace. I think that 87-minute runtime really helps. We watched the American edit of this film. I thought the...
Aaron had bought a new Blu-ray version.
The Kraken Blu-ray had the Japanese version, but it did not.
I'm sadly mistaken.
But I don't think there's much differences.
So
we just watched it dubbed.
The dubbing is rough.
Dubbing is not that good. And then the character of Nita,
Hi, guys.
Yeah,
hi,
he's got a horror.
Oh, my gosh,
actor.
Guys. We gotta get this done, guys. Yeah, you gotta get this done, okay?
It's exactly what it sounds like.
His voice actor is terrible. But...
I'm gonna take the sailboat and I'm gonna sail across the Pacific, okay? No.
There are a lot of contrivances throughout this movie to move the plot along, but I'm not gonna really trash on it too much for that because I have a good time watching this movie.
No, it's entertaining for sure.
It's a fun, cheesy B movie, unlike last week where it had a lot of contrivances, but I was not having a good time.
I gave it a D minus.
And this movie is 10 minutes shorter also, which helps it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you know, like the first contrivance, it's a minor part of the movie, but it really like begs a lot of questions. Like at the beginning, you know, what is the main character's name? He is...
the guy who's robbing the place?
Yeah, or? No, Ryota or whatever his name is. His brother Yata is lost at sea. So to win a... He sees an ad for a dancing competition to win a sailboat, but... I have a lot of questions about this dancing competition. Like, it says it's been going on 3 days.
For 3 days, and started with like 200-something people? Like
so,
300 people?
Does that mean like they've been dancing literally for 3 days?
I think contests like that, the way that they work, it's implied that there's like certain
like
amounts of breaks.
Dance for 8 hours a day, and then they go home and take a rest and come back. And
I bet that they dance constantly, and then they have probably hour-long breaks every so often where they are allowed to rest or use the bathroom or eat or something.
And, like, it's a dancing competition, so, like, do you have to do a certain type of dance? Do you have to dance so fast? What if someone picks an easier dance than another person and then they just aren't worn out as fast?
I mean, I could just sit and do the twist all day long or something.
There's so many questions. I have no answers.
I mean, I could just dab all day long.
Why would you pick a difficult dance if you're wanting to go?
I could just sit here and just...
And then they get to the
Andrew's just in here. He's just like,
after they lose the dance competition, they go to the sailboat yard or whatever, and they get on the boat, and Kira Takarada's character Yoshimura or whatever his name is there.
Yeah, they're like talking about, I wonder who owns this boat. I'd love to meet the owner of this boat.
Like,
and he's like, I'll introduce you to him.
He's like, huh? Crash. This is not his boat. Obviously, he's planning on stealing this boat, is what I gather. But like, he offers to let them stay the night. Like,
yeah, that's my question. I'm like, if you're stealing this boat, why are you letting three rando guys just chill for the
night? But this is a short movie, and they need to somehow get these four characters together on a boat on this island. So, you know, I'm just going to, yeah.
But why do we need Akira Takarada? Or whatever his name is.
Why do we need his character?
Yeah.
Well, because it's Akira Takarada.
Yeah.
He's a great actor. And he is kind of, he becomes like kind of the leader of the group.
Yeah, but theoretically, you could have had this movie without him being in it.
I mean, you could have dropped one of these characters and kind of condensed,
Would it have been as fun without him, though?
But I feel like, I don't know, they needed the one
that brings a certain je ne sais quoi.
They
speak French here, no?
They needed one character to be, like, the desperate one who needed to find his brother. They needed one to be the leader. They needed one to be the comic relief. I would say the most dispensable character is the one that's not the three that I listed.
Not the one with the annoying voice. Not the one looking for his brother.
Not the one, and not Akira Takarada, the other guy. I don't really get his purpose in the movie, except just to be there. So I think he is kind of forgotten, like towards the end of this movie. Like he
doesn't. So here's my question: when they're writing this movie, how about just have the three characters and Akira Takarada's character is just part of this group in the first place, and they just all steal the book together.
I kind of like the tension of he's not really part of the group. He's actually a known bank robber, so they're having to learn to work
together.
It's
an interesting part of the story. I'm just saying that they could have dropped it.
And I like where he has, like, the toy gun, and the other guy's he broke, but I was playing with it. And then, like you pointed out, like, so we get to the island, and they see the red bamboo, and they're offloading all these slaves from Infant Island, which Infant Island must be really close.
Boy, it must be close.
Yeah, because later on, like, Ryota, he'll get tied up to a hot air balloon, and he will somehow magically steer it to Infant Island. Not even, like, he's not even, like, in the basket. He's just tied. He's dangling from a rope.
There's not even a basket.
So yeah, there wasn't even a basket on it.
So the wind must have just luckily been blowing in that direction.
But and like, then he got there and it popped.
It
didn't pop.
I think it just ran out of helium.
It just ran out of helium.
But
hot air balloons don't work off helium. They work off of hot air.
Ran out of hot air.
Hence the name hot air balloon.
I guess.
It ran out of hot air.
Anyway.
You ran out of hot air.
When they're offloading these slaves, and like Tim, like, run away, and there's just a random nice little canoe.
There's just a canoe sitting there. I'm like, where'd this canoe come
from? For them to escape, which they don't, because Ebra gets them. I didn't write down when Ebra first appears, but it's really early in the movie.
Ebra first appears when the sailboat, the nice sailboat that they're on, gets wrecked in a storm.
You see the claw, which I will say, well, we'll talk about that later.
We're going to talk about it later. Effects.
And then, like, apparently, the Red Bamboo doesn't, like, check these Infant Islanders, because Dio still has a knife on her, and the sword that they find came off one of the Infant Islanders. Like, they just let the Infant Islanders carry whatever weapons they
have. I have another question. Okay, so listen. They get to this island, right, and they take off their life jackets. In a survival situation, you're not going to take off anything you bring with you. You're going to carry as much as you can with you, because everything's a commodity in a survival situation.
Yeah.
B, they climb up this cliff, and the guy with the obnoxious voice grabs a sword, and his first instinct is, oh my god, it's gotta be cannibals. I'm like, what? I'm like, why is that his first instinct?
He's
like,
comic relief. That's
I'm like,
that
who's first?
Thing.
And then I think it was Akira Takarada makes the same comment. He's like, guys, we better be careful. There could be cannibals here. So because you picked up a sword.
I don't know if that was a sarcastic comment.
It must be cannibals. I'm like, how is that your first go-to?
Have you ever seen any movie set on an island?
I'm just saying, if I wash up on a deserted island and I find a sword, or what I think is a deserted island, and I find a sword, my first thought is not going to be, oh my god. It's going to be people that want to try to eat me. I'm going to be like, oh my god, there's someone here that can maybe help me.
Didn't you watch Blue Lagoon?
Sadly.
Cannibals. That also leads to my next question. Do all Infant Islanders speak Japanese?
Sure.
It's a miracle.
They had the same.
Should they not speak like a native language?
They do have some sort of, I would imagine, some sort of native language, but
That's their second language.
I do like.
They're all bilingual in whatever the native Infant Island language is in Japanese, because it's just that convenient.
I do like.
Yes.
We're just nitpicking.
Kumi Mizuno's
right
performance. I think she's I think all the performances are pretty good in this movie. I mean, the comic relief guy is kind of annoying, but I think there's a lot more to do with the dubbing voice than anything else.
Yeah, I feel like if we were to watch the Japanese version, he's probably better.
Less annoying.
Not necessarily the Japanese audio.
Yeah.
He's probably more funny.
And then, but I think all the performances are good. Even the bad guy, like Akihiko Hirata and Jun Chizaki. I mean, they're hamming it up, but it's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, all the acting's pretty good, but and then they decide, like, I don't really understand the first time they go to break into the Red Bamboo facility. I don't really understand their reasoning why. But for some reason, Kumi Mizuno is like, Dio is like carrying around a dove. I don't know how she caught this dove. I don't know where she got it from. But she's just carrying it around in case they need a distraction, I guess. Mm-hmm. They release it at one point when they accidentally like trip over and almost reveal themselves because they're carrying like this fake bush thing around. But they get in, and the Red Bamboo have terrible security. But they get in, they realize it's a nuclear plant or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
But the Red Bamboo, throughout this movie, they're like stormtroopers. They are terrible shots. I mean, they are spraying machine gun fire everywhere. And no...
They did hit those two guys at the beginning of the
movie.
None
of the major characters ever get hit.
They barely
hit. Plot armor, man.
Plot armor. I tell you what, it's strong. And then we know this is where the group splits up because they kind of get separated here. And, you know, the Ryoto goes to meet and meets his brother on Infant Island. Yata, who we know was... After his boat was sunk at sea, presumably probably sunk by Ebra, but they never really say that. He washed up on Infant Island. Mm-hmm. And then...
Andy.
Okay, so I have that Mothra shows up at the 29... Like, the matte painting that is Mothra shows up at the 29-minute mark. We see a lot of... There's a lot of cutaway shots. Runtime filler. Of the Infant Island natives praying to Mothra. I do miss the original Mothra song, but I do kind of like the new Mothra song too. And the I think the girls playing the twins, the pair Bambi, they are they're pretty good as the Mothra twins.
I mean, they're no peanuts.
They serve their purpose here. They look identical. Yeah. I'll give them
they
that.
They do. Except one of them was not wearing the little yellow flowery armband. Unacceptable.
Whatever. But Godzilla doesn't act. We see him asleep at the 31-minute mark, but he doesn't actually wake up until 52 minutes into a hour 26 movie. Oh. But, you know, it's fine.
It's casual.
And then, like, casual. So then, you know, Godzilla wakes up. He, you know, we were talking about how Godzilla, King Kong was originally supposed to be in this movie. So you can see it in the scene. First of all, I think it's really evident. They wake him, Godzilla, up using lightning, which is what they did in King Kong versus Godzilla to wake up King Kong. So, you know, obviously that was just taken straight from the original script. There's a lot of rock throwing in this movie, which, I mean, they've had rock throwing in throughout the Godzilla movies franchise, yes, where he kicks a lot of rocks and throws one occasionally, but this literally, like, rock throwing contest that everyone and Godzilla have, feels more like it was written for King Kong. And then especially the final battle, the way it's choreographed between Godzilla and Ebra really feels like it was meant for King Kong. The way that, like, I could see King Kong using, like, his brute strength to, like, rip off the claws of Ebra and stuff like that. That's not really something I see Godzilla doing so much with his short little arms and everything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it really looks at times like they just scratched out King Kong and wrote Godzilla. The only place where that really wouldn't work for King Kong is there's a scene where Godzilla attacks the Red Bamboo base or whatever, and he can't get through the power lines, which really wouldn't match with King Kong, or that they might have wrote that in for Godzilla or whatever. But yeah, I definitely see the King Kong influence on this movie. But anyway, so once King Godzilla wakes up, fights Ebra the first time, beats him pretty handily. Ebra's no match for Godzilla in this movie.
No.
Ebra's a pretty weak villain. Godzilla then goes and he's attacked by a giant condor. A giant bird.
And condor.
For like, that bird comes out of nowhere. Like, it's not set up earlier in the movie or
no,
anything.
This giant condor just comes out of nowhere and just like attacks him.
And
then Godzilla like hits him with his atomic ray.
Atomic ray that burns. And then he's attacked by planes. At this point, also, he's like, he's got Kumi Mizuno, Dio, kind of cornered, like he sees her. And this is another, like, King Kong trope where he sees the pretty woman, you know, and he kind of, like, is attracted to her. And at one point, he even, like, points at her, like, you stay there. And then he's attacked by planes in this great Masaru Sato score in the background. But these planes attack, and of course, like, and this is a trope with the Godzilla movies already, but, like, these planes are, like, flying so low and so close to him. Like, I don't understand why you would do that, but it's whatever. And then after that, he's mad, so he goes and destroys the Red Bamboo base, and the Red Bamboo activate a nuclear bomb, set a timer, and our heroes can't stop it, even though all they have to do is reach this little thing and turn it.
It might be harder than what you're thinking.
Yeah, they can't reach it. I think I would, like, literally, like, dislocate my shoulder if that meant turning that thing off.
Yeah.
But, So then they realize, like, oh, we got afraid of Mothra even harder and hope she comes and rescues us off this island.
More furiously.
So, you know, they get out and they gave the, like, the people in the native islanders that were, you know, enslaved to make this yellow liquid. Nita, like, tells them to make phony yellow liquid. So they do, and they give it to the Rambambu, who are subsequently destroyed by Ibra before the final fight with Godzilla. So while they're praying to Mothra and building this neck, Godzilla goes and fights Ibra. And I love it where he, like, rips his last claw off and, like, just taunting Ibra by closing it. It's like, he's such a douchebag. But, and then Godzilla, or Mothra, shows up to save her people. She finally wakes up. She's like, stop the singing already. Mm-hmm. And she shows up and she picks up her people after a quick duel with Godzilla. And she flies off.
Very quick, she kind of, like, he just, like, shoots his atomic breath at her, and she just kind of, like, she gets flaps up and, like, over him and then knocks him over.
Knocks him over with her wing, like, all WWE style.
He's like, yo, get off me.
And, like, and picks him up and takes him.
Mothra is referred to as a he in this film.
I don't know if that's just a dub thing, but, you know, Mothra has proved to be pretty gender fluid throughout the franchise already. So, you know, whatever, but anyway. And then
ain't no hating on the Mothra.
Godzilla does a cannonball into the water.
Straight up, literally cannonballs into the water.
And swims away before the island explodes. In a pretty cool effect, I would. Yeah. But we'll overall, you know, I've ribbed this movie quite a bit, but I have a lot of fun with this movie. It's like a...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not like the best story, and the characters don't... The characters and the character motivations don't always make the most sense.
Yeah.
But they're entertaining enough characters.
It's got a really fun they're B-movie vibe, too.
Yeah, it's just a fun... It's a fun movie. I mean, it's definitely not good, but...
Yeah. I enjoy it quite a bit. I mean...
It's entertaining.
There's a difference between... I mean, a movie can be entertaining without being...
Because, like, Aquaman is not a good movie.
But it's entertaining.
Yeah,
I mean, I know what
you're saying. And it's got moments.
You know, as far as Showa Era Godzilla movies go, I mean, it's pretty good compared to this.
And then, like, say something like Venom.
Yeah.
That's definitely not a good movie. But it's got entertaining.
And I like the feeling that Jun Fukuda brings to this. It's... a lot more like a lot more levity than you'd usually get with a Honda movie, and just a lot more like a fun, like, I call it this, especially because of the soundtrack, a surfer movie vibe, like, in this movie. And I don't know, and I even like, I don't know, I have quite a bit of fun, and the characters, you know, they're good enough, and the acting's good enough. But do we want to say anything else before we move on?
No, I think we can move on.
All right, well, let's move on to some creature design. Oh, we got 1, 2, 3. We got four. Four to talk about.
Four.
We'll start with the king himself, Godzilla. This seems starting to look a little beat up in this movie.
He's been used a couple times.
The head really looks starting to look a little rough. Like, his eyes are, like, yellowed. Like, the neck... I feel like the breathing holes in the neck have been kind of stretched out over the years, so you can, like, see him more clearly. Especially at the end, right before he does his cannonball.
You can, like, see his eye holes, basically.
And, like, the suit just kind of looks kind of... I don't know, this looks... It just looks well-worn, kind of baggy.
It does look a little baggy. It looks very loose on him, unless just after all the years of, you know, Haru Nakajima just sweating his freaking... Never mind.
I think,
like a freaking pig in this thing, losing weight.
I think a lot of it, probably just because the suit... Because it's just, like, styrofoam and rubber. It's probably just starting to lose its integrity a little bit. So, but but it's still not terrible. It's still not horrific.
He's decent. His nose is still, like, really rounded in this movie. Which I don't care for as much. It makes him look a little less menacing as far as Godzilla.
His, like, dorsal fins, like, the parts that used to be white are, like, now really dark yellow.
Yeah.
Maybe they painted him like that, or maybe they just aged like that. I'm not sure, but...
I don't know. It was how long has it been since the last movie?
Well, at this point, it'd only been probably about a year. So, but this is the fourth time they'd used this suit. So,
it's probably getting
well up
warm
there in age, you know? But it won't be the last suit they wear out till it's literally falling apart. But anyway, so moving on from Godzilla, let's talk about Mothra. Again, looks a little aged. I think it's the same puppet that they used for the last movie. The hair looks a little matted and yellow. Whatever.
I mean, Mothra looks like Mothra. So, I mean, she's all right.
The matte painting they have in Mothra.
It's
clearly
okay.
A matte painting.
It's okay.
Clearly, I mean, it's a nice painting.
That's effects, nice though, point. Aaron. We'll talk about effects
okay,
later.
Okay. The giant condor who makes one brief appearance. You can't really get a clear look at him.
It's not too bad. Looks, I guess, like a giant condor.
More like a giant vulture.
Looks like a giant vulture, yeah. Like a turkey vulture.
I mean, for the quick cut shots you get of it, I mean, it serves its purpose, okay. I guess. It's not too bad.
It's a bird. It is a bird.
And then Evra, who is, I think he's more of a giant shrimp than a giant lobster.
He's like a hybrid shrimp lobster thing, because obviously shrimp don't have giant talons or giant like claws.
Yeah, but lobsters have two giant claws, where he only has really one, and he has like one that's kind of like a spear thing. But he is in the bottom half of the suit is obviously always hidden by water, so you don't see the legs.
You do see the tail once or twice.
Yeah, underwater.
Underwater.
They use probably like a puppet tail or something.
Yeah, something like that.
A prop. But, I mean, it looks fine.
It looks like a giant shrimpy lobster.
I like the eyes. Like, you see, like crustacean
they look like eyes. It looks like a crustacean, yeah.
Yeah, I think it looks fine.
Looks like a big old crustacean thingy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Half lobster, half shrimp thing.
Yeah.
Definitely looks like that.
This Ebra will make an appearance in Godzilla Final Wars.
Oof.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway.
I guess Godzilla just fights everyone in that movie, I guess.
Yeah. Almost every single monster.
Let's move on to special effects. Hit and miss, I would say.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about any model that has to do with a boat or any model that has to do with where they have to put little bitty person figurines on it. Looks like terrible.
I think the boats. They tried their best.
The boats themselves look fine. This is until you put little bitty people on them.
And they actually try to move the little dolls.
No. That little outrigger canoe. Okay, so obviously, we talked about the scene with the little outrigger canoe that these infant islanders just happened to stumble upon. They're rowing. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, a canoe. Well, they get in it and they're rowing, and then Ebra pops out of the water and they're trying to get away, and it does this weird wide shot. Where it has this little model canoe, which looks fine, and then there's these little bitty people in it, and they're like trying to, they're moving them so they're rowing. And they're like just rocking back and forth, and they have little oars, and they're just like moving too. And I'm like, And then they pick them up, and then Ebra like spears them after they fall in the water. Ooh, and the matting of that is bad. Yeah,
the matting is hit and miss. I think there's a couple of decent matting shots, and then there's some bad ones too.
Yeah.
The models, I think, look fine. Like, I love the life-size models, like, the sets they built for, like, inside the Rambit Moo base, like, the 50s sci-fi style look of them, like, I really appreciate that, even if they're kind of rudimentary. And then they built some life-size props for, like, the outside that look decent. And then, like, the city destroy the model that they used to destroy, I mean, it looks fine. I mean, it's a little... But yeah, that model, the red bamboo stuff, I mean, it looks nice. Godzilla's heat ray looks nice.
Yeah.
I love, like, when he hits Ebra with his heat ray and, it, like, the steam coming off his... his stomach as he like flips backwards, and I think the underwater fights, I mean, for a movie made in 66 on this type of budget, they look okay. But I think the effects overall, I mean, they're obviously limited on their budget, but because it's on an island setting, they don't try to do too much. See, the difference between this movie and Atragon, or one of the differences is like, you know, Atragon had a limited budget, but I feel like they went about handling that the wrong way. They just filled the movie with a lot of boardroom scenes and like melodrama, and then like a few bad models here and there. Whereas this, they don't have time to show the monsters. Like we say, Godzilla only is in the movie for literally like the last half hour. But they have, you know, they have more fluid action, like these people running from the red bamboo. You know, more exciting stuff than just people sitting in boardrooms.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Or whatever. Or talking about how their fathers abandoned them or whatever. Which, you know, I like good human drama, but these are B-movies. They're not going to have good human drama most of the time. But no, I think the effects, you know, they're passable, so.
Yeah, no, the effects are passable for the most part. They have some times where they're not great, but their matting is a little rough at times, but other than that, I mean, they're all right.
So let's talk about Masaru Sato.
I won't say it's bad. It's different.
We talked about Masaru Sato and Godzilla Raids Again, and we all said, I think, we did not like his score for Raids Again. It was very generic, monster movie-ish, kind of bland.
This one does not fit a Godzilla movie.
I kind of enjoy it, though, because it's just so goofy. And like I said, it's like a surfer movie soundtrack.
It's weird.
And
I enjoy
it. I mean, it is goofy. Especially the scene with the jets. I mean, the score really doesn't match the scene. But at the same time, I have fun with it. Like, it helps add to the levity of the movie. And I really like his score next time around. But
it just makes the movie super cheesy. It doesn't make any sense why this music would be in a Godzilla movie to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not, like, bad music. It just doesn't make any sense in this movie to me.
I enjoy it.
I enjoy it. And I think it matches better.
I mean, if you put it into a different movie, I would understand it. And I kind of get why he did this, because, I mean, it's a sea movie. It's about a sea monster, which is fine. It just doesn't fit for me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It doesn't always fit the scene. But
I want more dramatic music in a movie about monsters fighting.
I think
Sato
really finds his rhythm with the next movie of
kind and like of the, there's the scene with the boat at the beginning when the sailboat, they see the claw come out, and it plays this stupid surfer theme. I'm like, this should be like an intense moment, and we're going to play stupid music.
Yeah, it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't exactly match the scenes all the time, but I just kind of enjoy the B-movie quality of it, and like I said, I think the next movie it will merge a lot better with the film that it's playing to, but so I think overall, I'll say it's fine. I mean, you know, issues, but it's better than his Raids Again score, that's for sure.
Yes.
I mean, it's no Akira Fukube.
Definitely not.
No Fukube. But if we'd have been a Fukube, we'd have heard a lot of bum, 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 bum.
Oh, continuously, I'm sure.
Every time Godzilla
showed up. But anyway, I guess it's time for final thoughts. Andrew, why don't you start us off?
Well, I enjoyed this movie. Even its cheesy soundtrack. And I'm going to give this movie a C+.
A C+. Okay, Dylan, what do you think?
So this story, I mean, obviously it's not one of the most competent stories that we've seen, and it's not got the best characters per se, but the characters that we are given are entertaining enough for what they are, and I think they're written well enough to where they are funny enough, but they still have good moments together as a group. Other than that, I mean, the story is okay. I mean, it's not great. It's kind of outlandish, but I mean, you gotta go with what you go with for a Godzilla movie, so I mean, it's alright. The acting here is actually pretty decent on everybody's part. The voices that they use for the dubbing are good, except for the one guy who, what is his name? His name was Nita.
Yeah.
Nita, his voice, his dub, whoever they got to dub him, that was a mistake. But I think they just did it to add to his comedic relief of his character, which is fine, I guess. Creature design, I mean, Godzilla, like we said, I mean, he's starting to look a little aged, looking a little baggy, and a little worse for wear. Maybe it might be time to switch him out. Mothra looks...
To their credit.
Mothra looks like Mothra, also looking a little old. Ebra looks pretty cool, I guess, and this condor thing looks like a bird now. The effects are hit and miss. I mean, some of the model work on the boats. The boats themselves are good until they put little bitty people on them, and then they look terrible. Maddiness is hit and miss in some certain scenes, you know, like the one I told you where Ebra like spears those two dudes.
Yeah.
And then there's like a shot with Godzilla like stomping his foot down, and ooh, it's a little rough. And then the score, I just don't buy the score to this movie. I mean, it just doesn't fit. This is obviously, you know, a cheesier movie, but I don't need my music to be 50s, 60s surfer movie cheese in a Godzilla movie. I mean, I want kind of an intense score for certain scenes, and it just doesn't work for me. And I know I sound like I just trash this movie pretty hard, but I actually do enjoy the movie quite a bit. I mean, it's entertaining, so I'm also going to give it probably, I guess, a C+.
All right, well, yeah, I agree with a lot of the stuff that you guys said. I mean, yes, this movie is filled with plot contrivances. We talked about them. But, I mean, this really feels like and plays like a B-movie. And if you get with it on that level, I think it's a fun B-movie plot. There's a lot of ridiculous stuff, but it's a lot of the times ridiculous in a fun way. I think, you know, the fight scenes with Godzilla and Ebra are just fun enough. I think a lot of the stuff with Red Bamboo and, you know, the hijinks that our heroes get into, yeah, and sneaking into their base and all that stuff, you know, it's fun and mildly entertaining stuff. The score, I agree with you, it doesn't match the scene a lot of the times, but I don't mind it. I think it kind of adds to the B-movie quality and levity of this movie, because this is a really lighthearted movie, even compared to the other Godzilla movies we've watched. And the effects, like we've said, hit and miss, but again, nothing that just really takes me out of the movie.
Yeah.
I even kind of appreciate that they made the little stick figures move, even if it doesn't look good.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'll give them credit for trying. It just doesn't look great.
Yeah, I mean, considering the budget constraints they had on this movie, I think setting it on an island was a really good idea.
They made very smart decisions with this movie. I mean, like you're saying.
They didn't try to have like a huge model city on this limited budget. They saved their money there and they could spend it in other places. And by, you know, again, reusing the Godzilla and Mothra suits. I mean, they look aged, but, you know, again, saving money so they could use it elsewhere. I think the Ebra suit looks really good, actually. Mm-hmm. And the Gondor thing, like, it comes out of left field. Like, they should have just had one scene earlier where, like, they...
Show a nest or something,
but it's whatever. And then the plane sequence, which is just hilarious.
I think he wrote a note, like, why are the planes flying so low?
I talked about it a while ago. I was like, why are the planes flying so low? Like, that's...
They're literally flying right into Godzilla.
That's not a new problem for Godzilla movies. That's a problem since the first one, why the plane's flying so low. But anyway, I don't know. I think I really have a fun time with this movie. I think it's a perfectly entertaining B movie, and therefore I will give it a B. So
I guess that's fair.
I think it's fair. So, but I guess it's time for news. I got a decent little collection.
He's got a decent little chunk now.
Really exciting stuff for me personally. Me and Andrew, I think, we both agree. From Mill Creek, who is putting out the steelbooks of Ultra Q and Ultraman. They've announced their upcoming lineup through the summer of 2020.
I'm kidding.
So, November 2019, they're going to release Ultra 7 on standard Blu-ray and on steelbook. And then Ultraman Orb and Ultraman Geed, they're going to release the Blu-ray, the series on Blu-ray, and the series and the movie on Blu-ray.
Are they going to be, like, combined together?
No, they're going to be separate. I mean, the series will be separate. And then in spring 2020, they're coming with Return of Ultraman, and then Ultraman R&B, which is the series and the movie, then Ultraman Fight Orb, then Ultraman Ace. And then in summer 2020, we're getting Ultraman Taro, Ultraman Leo, Ultraman Zero, the series and the movie, and Ultraman X, the series and the movie. So, really exciting stuff.
Aaron will probably buy all of them.
Yes, I will be buying all of them. You know, if I had waited just a little bit longer to get into Ultraman, I wouldn't have had to hunt down those, like, sketchy Malaysian DVDs that I have.
Yeah, when he ordered one, he had this. Okay, so here a few months back, Aaron ordered, what was it, Ultraman Taro, okay?
I got Ultraman Ace.
He already had Ultraman Ace because he had just finished watching it. And he orders Ultraman Taro, and he receives Ultraman Ace, and he's like, hey, you sent me the wrong one. Guy's like, yeah, you pay send back. I send you right one. And I'm like, yeah. Aaron's like, what?
The guy... He did not speak good English, which, you know, I appreciate. I really respect the fact that he's running his own business and he's communicating with a lot of customers who obviously do not speak the same language he speaks. I don't know if he meant to say you don't have to pay to send it back. I'll just send you. I don't know if that's what he meant the first time around or if he meant what he said that I had to pay. And then I was like, I responded back. I was like, I don't feel like I should have to pay. You sent the wrong one. Because shipping back to Malaysia was, like, astronomical.
It's like, hundreds of dollars.
And, like, I was like, can I just get what I ordered? And then he responded back, oh, no, I mean, you send back, and, I don't know, I just send, you know, I have to send back. I send you Ultraman Taro. And I'm not making fun of, like...
That's literally how he wrote it.
Stereotypical Asian accent. That's literally how he said it. Like, worded it. But, which I appreciate that he did that.
Yeah, and now Aaron has two copies of Ultraman Ace and one copy of Ultraman Taro.
Point is, I got Ultraman Taro, and I have now watched it. We are still working on the animated series, The Ultraman. We're about halfway through it. But anyway, so yeah, that's big, exciting news from Mill Creek. And I'm going to be ordering those as they come out.
I'm sure you will.
Fun. The Godzilla 2014 movie is coming to Amazon Prime Video this month. Probably already up, actually. Haven't looked and checked. But coming to Prime Video. So if you don't own it and you are a member of Amazon Prime, I realize that's a lot of what ifs, you can now check it out for free.
How many people do you know that aren't a member of Amazon Prime around us?
Exactly. Everyone loves
it. I think a lot of people in this area have Amazon Prime. And most college students have Amazon Prime because they can get... And get it free for 6 months, and then all you gotta do is go change your email, and you get another free 6 months.
You gotta work the system,
bro. I can't tell you how many Audible trials I've had just to listen to audiobooks.
Yeah, that's funny. And then, finally, one of my favorite YouTube channels, Honest Trailers, they did an episode over Godzilla King of the Monsters. Dylan, you watched it. What'd you think?
I don't know. That was pretty spot on.
Yeah.
It's pretty spot on them. I mean,
They just tell the truth.
They tear it apart pretty good.
They just tell the truth, though. I mean, and Honest Trailers, I mean, You know, they don't just rip apart movies they perceive as bad. They rip apart just about everything. But I think...
I mean, even movies that most people would consider good, they find some sort of flaws to make fun of in these movies and these trailers.
If you've never checked out Honest Trailers...
it's on Screen Junkies channel.
Yeah, on YouTube. I suggest you check it out. I will recommend my favorite ever. They did one episode over the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and it is the funniest thing ever. It had like the first time I watched it, it had me practically in the floor rolling. And then I showed it to my cousin who I was living with at the time, and she I don't even think she's watched Lord of the Rings, and she literally, like, she was eating cereal and she literally like spit her cereal out everywhere laughing so hard.
I will say another channel that does funny videos kind of similar in the same vein, Screen Rant, the guy Ryan who does the pitch meetings, is pretty funny too.
I don't think he did a Godzilla pitch meeting yet, but I didn't see it anyway. But he's pretty funny too. I like him a lot. But anyway, I guess that's all the news I had.
Mm-hmm.
Next week we will, like I said last episode, we'll be going to Britain. Not literally, but figuratively. We are going to watch a British monster movie from 1961 called Gorgo. Then we will go back to Godzilla the following week with
Son of Godzilla,
and the week after that we're gonna watch the Japanese remake / ripoff of Gorgo, Gappa. So
oh boy,
lots and lots of fun.
And then what's after that?
And we will after that,
Megalon.
It's a Godzilla. No, it's
no smog monster.
No, it's a Destroy All Monsters.
Destroy All Monsters.
Destroy All Monsters, I believe. So.
Did we skip that one the first time?
No, you watched it.
Okay.
So, we'll be watching Gorgo next week. You know, I try to double bill these. I think we watched Old Atragon last week because had to do with the sea. This one had to do with the sea. A bit of a tenuous connection, but that's why we did it. Gorgo has to do with a monster and her son. And then, of course, the Godzilla movie after that is about Godzilla and his son. So, see a nice little double feature there. So, yeah. I'm excited. I know Dylan's probably not, but...
Son of Godzilla's okay.
Yeah. Son of Godzilla is a
fun one. Gotta get the Gorgo.
I was talking about Gorgo.
Oh. I'm not going to enjoy that, okay. Am I?
It's a little plotting. Not going to...
Oh, boy.
But we'll get there. And keep an open mind.
Maybe Son of Godzilla's okay, though.
So I like Son of Godzilla.
I've seen that one.
It's personal.
Pre-thoughts.
It's pretty entertaining. So anyway, I think that's all we had for this week.
Yeah.
If you still are interested in listening to our other podcast.
If I ever get the episode edited. Sorry. I have I'm taking like 6 classes and they're all online, okay? And I have a lot of homework. And it sucks, dude. I haven't been in school, so just to let you guys know, I went to Oklahoma State University up in Stillwater. Did not quite work out the way I wanted to. Of course, I went to school in a small town in Oklahoma, small rural town. I was not prepared either very well. Of course, partially it's my fault because I didn't go to class as much as I should have.
Partially.
But I also did not understand a lot of the concepts that I was learning. So, yeah. But anyway, did not work out the way I wanted to. So I took a year off of school and I went back to school this past summer and I am finally enrolled in school full time again. And I forgot how much I hate it with a passion.
Oh, yeah. It'll remind you real quick. I've been going to school
first for week of class, like forever. First week of class, I swear, I had like 15 assignments due. I was like,
Yeah. No, I was literally... You know, I'm an accounting major. I've taken all these hard accounting classes, still taking them. And I was just sitting in strategic management, and he was just going over, like, literally basic income statement, balance sheet level stuff. And I was just like,
huh?
I hate this. I hate this with passion.
Why am I here?
No. Why am I here? So it's kind of early in the semester to already.
That's how I feel about college thoughts. Algebra.
But anyway, you don't want to hear about our school woes. So. No. Anyway, we're at DNA Film Wars. You can listen to our podcast over there. We talk about, right now we're a bi-weekly podcast. We're going to talk about the big movie of the month, the biggest movie of the month, along with our Star Wars movie.
What we perceive as the biggest movie of the month.
We did not make our deadline for the August Star Wars movie.
It will come out soon.
It will try to come out soon.
And then this week we will be going to the theater to see It Chapter 2.
It Chapter 2.
We'll get a review of that eventually. And then next month our Star Wars movie will be Return of the Jedi. This month, yeah. We'll be Return of the Jedi. Yeah,
2 Star Wars movies in 1 month, because we missed last week.
Sorry.
But no.
And then the month after that, I believe we are looking to do Doctor Sleep, followed by The Force Awakens.
October is Joker.
Joker, followed by The Force Awakens.
And then
November will be... Not The
Force Awakens, Rise of Skywalker.
Rise. No, Force Awakens is
October. Oh, yeah, you're right, I'm sorry.
Force Awakens is October. November we'll probably do Doctor Sleep, followed by...
The Last
Jedi, and then... obviously, December will be a big month for us.
A lot of Star Wars in December.
Be a lot of Star Wars. We'll have a wrap up for this whole series that we've been doing. We'll do our Rise of Skywalker review,
and then we'll have an end of the year wrap up.
2020 look forward, because we'll have 2020 vision. I'm sorry, I'm killing myself.
But yeah, that's our DNA Film Wars podcast. You can check us out on all the major pod catching services.
Yeah.
As far as this podcast goes, you can contact us with any specific comments and or questions at stompthisway1954@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you want to follow us on social media, we are up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where Aaron stays pretty active over there. And we're at Stomp This Way on all those platforms. So make sure you give us a like or a follow and tell your friends about us.
Andrew, where can they find our website at?
You can find us at www.stompthisway.podbean.com.
Yeah. Over there, we have our full schedule of events, as well as previous movies and their grades that we have given them listed.
News items, which I need to update.
And backlogged episodes.
Backlogged episodes. Everything you need to know about our podcast and us ourselves, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, that's all we have for you this week.
Yeah.
We've rambled a little bit. You've learned a little bit of our personal lives and how much we hate college. But with all that being said, I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Dylan, and we'll catch you in the next one.